This is a new dimension in sound.
You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Welcome to How to Tour Italy with your host, Anthony Capozzoli. Anthony's passion for Italy is contagious. His dream is to bring Italy to life for people everywhere and to help them embrace the wonderful Italian lifestyle at home. Now, with How to Tour Italy, let's welcome travel expert, guidebook author, photographer, and radio host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Hi, I'm Anthony Capozzoli, and welcome to the How to Tour Italy show today. We have a great show packed up for you today. We're going to be talking first about the late, great Michelangelo and his smelly feet. We then have a wonderful guest and author, Angela Nickerson, talking about her book, A Journey into Michelangelo's Rome. And then I'm very excited about Chef Massimo Salatino of Mia Francesca Restaurants here in Chicago. We'll be talking about the wonderful food they serve on a regular basis at all of their wonderful restaurants throughout Chicagoland. We're going to get started now with the Michelangelo segment, and I've titled it Michelangelo Had Smelly Feet. And after the piece, I think you'll know why. So I'm going to get started with that now. And if you have any questions or comments, please call in at 888-GO-FOR-IT. That's 888-463-6748 if you want to contribute to the conversation or ask a question of me or any of the wonderful guests. If you miss any of this, you can listen to the full download podcast of the entire show on TalkZone.com or just go to unabellavista.com/radioshow and click on the link there. So let's get started with Michelangelo and his smelly feet. The great Michelangelo was a workaholic even by modern standards. He chose to work day and night and rarely stopped even for a meal. He was so inspired and focused that he saw food as an interruption and, I guess, a necessary evil. Even when he could be bothered to eat, he often continued to work through a light meal of simply bread and wine. Think of this. If food was considered an interruption for the great Michelangelo, you can imagine how much, or more precisely, how little attention he paid to the daily ablutions in life that most people take for granted. It wasn't unusual for Michelangelo to work in the same clothes for weeks at a time. He would wear them all day, laboring over his art, and then sleep in them, only taking them off to change as an afterthought. And when he finally pulled off his boots, his skin would peel right off with them. And to put it bluntly, as a result of this, Michelangelo had smelly feet. I mean, imagine working in the heat of Rome and in Florence for weeks at a time in the same leather boots. I mean, I can only imagine. Michelangelo, he wasn't too pleasant a presence to be around, although he was the quintessential master who truly followed his passion in life from a very early age. Early in his life, his father and his uncle beat him, hoping to deter his ambition of being an artist. They both thought that becoming an artist was beneath the family name. Michelangelo, though, wasn't too concerned about this attitude, and he didn't appear throughout his life to be concerned by what his contemporaries would have seen as his rightful station in life. He wanted to be an artist, and he worked tirelessly to become one. From a very early age, Michelangelo signed all of his letters as Michelangelo the Sculptor, and I'll get to why that's important in a minute. He believed his passion for sculptor and his ability to work with stone came from his wet nurse. She was married to a stonemason, and her father was a stonemason. Michelangelo believed that the dust from the stones from his wet nurse mixed with his childhood milk, giving him his love of sculpture that consumed the rest of his life. He gave his life willingly over to his art, and even his family seemed to have a change of heart when Lorenzo the Magnificent Medici recognized Michelangelo's ability and moved him into the Medici household to refine and grow his ability. I assume it had something also to do with the paycheck that Lorenzo regularly gave the great Michelangelo, because you can imagine one of the richest families in Italy, certainly Renaissance Italy, bringing their son into their home to train him, to teach him, to grow his ability in art, and better yet, to pay him. Meant quite a bit to the family name, and their station in life and how much money they would earn. Sadly, however, courtly life surely did not agree with the great Michelangelo. He did not like dressing in fine clothes. He chose not to concern himself with the feelings of others. He tended to be grumpy, speaking his mind with very little regard for the possible consequences. When he was young, an artist named Torrigiani, who was a pupil with Michelangelo in the art school he was studying with the Medici family, took offense to one of Michelangelo's criticisms of his work. Torrigiani punched Michelangelo in the nose, and this single blow rendered Michelangelo scarred for life. His nose never fully recovered, and you can see in the statues and busts and paintings of Michelangelo, you can often see that his nose is a bit askew, if you will. Renaissance Italy was a very, very competitive environment for artists, and they had to earn every commission. Even the great Michelangelo, however, was denied work that he wanted. It could be argued, though, that his greatest challenge was himself. He trusted no one and often thought that he was being conspired against by other artists, the Pope, and other powerful people, patrons throughout Italy, specifically in Rome and in Florence. To get to this point, when Pope Julius II offered Michelangelo the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, and keep in mind that to be offered work by the Pope is a very, very big deal, not just for the amount of money that it paid, but it's the Pope, and when you're requested to do anything by the Pope in Renaissance Italy, you certainly have to follow suit. However, Michelangelo flatly refused the work and recommended the great Raphael Sanzio for the job. Knowing full well, this is Michelangelo, now knowing full well that sculpture and not painting was his craft, he refused the Pope's request. In fact, he refused the Pope's request three times before ultimately having to accept. Michelangelo had been suggested to Pope Julius II by the Pope's architect, Bramante. Bramante's goal, however, was a bit seedy. He wanted Michelangelo to either do one of two things, either A, refuse the work, which would infuriate the Pope, or B, take the work and fail, which would leave a scar on Michelangelo's name and fame. Well, both outcomes would serve Bramante in not only humiliating Michelangelo, but promoting his great friend Raphael Sanzio, who's also from Urbino, like Bramante. Well, history has shown, and I have to say, that plan did not work. Michelangelo fully accepted the commission and promptly redesigned the original plans of the ceiling to better suit his taste and ability. But this was a kind of a work in progress for Michelangelo. He had to do a few things here. He had to learn how to, one, prepare the ceiling, two, prepare the ceiling not only to receive his paint, but receive the plaster because it being a fresco. He had to learn how to apply the plaster, had to learn how to mix his paint and design the cartoons, adjusting for the perspective of the viewer being so far below him on the floor looking up towards the ceiling. Even with the deck relatively stacked against him here, Michelangelo went on to create one of the greatest frescoes in the world. It is an overwhelming feeling when you're in the Sistine Chapel. It brings me chills each time I walk in there, and I've seen it dozens of times, and it's even more magnificent each time you see it, because you'll notice different and finer points in the work, and you're able to focus on other aspects of the ceiling. It took Michelangelo about 4 years to complete the ceiling, and he hated every single day of the work. As he stood there painting, it dripped down onto his face, his neck was arched. He focused on his work, even through the pain of his neck being stretched up, the paint dripping in his face, and let no one in the chapel while he was working on it until it was complete. However, the Pope insisted that it be unveiled at a very significant religious holiday, and lots of people from not only the church, but other powers that be, famous artists and patrons throughout Italy, were invited to come to a mass in the Sistine Chapel. Raphael Sanzio, who is next door painting in what are now called the Raphael Rooms, was in attendance. He saw the partial unveiling, and the very next day went back to his school of Athens in the room next door, which is a magnificent fresco, which we'll be talking about in a couple of weeks, and he carved out a giornata, which is a single day's work in fresco. So with the plaster wet, you're only able to paint onto the wet plaster to receive the paint for the day, so you only get one day to do the work. If the plaster dries before you're complete, you've got to start that whole piece over. So anyway, Raphael went back into the room where the School of Athens is and added the great Michelangelo as the philosopher Heraclitus on the steps, brooding over a block of marble. He's contemplating in his mind with pen in hand, kind of jotting down notes, and you can obviously tell it's Michelangelo. He's the only figure in the entire School of Athens dressed in clothes of the Renaissance and not in classical garb like the rest of the figures. When you go look at it, it's wonderful. You can actually see where the giornata had been chipped out and the great Raphael added Michelangelo. The clothes that Michelangelo is wearing in the image are his work clothes, and this gives us a wonderful picture of how he must have looked as he not only painted the ceiling, but did the rest of his wonderful, wonderful work throughout Italy. Well, it doesn't end there with the ceiling in the Sistine Chapel. 29 years later, to the day that Michelangelo unveiled the Sistine Chapel ceiling, he unveiled his Last Judgment. This is also located, obviously, in the Sistine Chapel. And the martyred Saint Sebastian holding his flayed skin is a self-portrait of Michelangelo located just below and to the right of Jesus in the image. It's a magnificent, magnificent fresco. It's as overpowering, in my opinion, as the Sistine Chapel ceiling itself. And we'll get into some of the specifics and details here in a bit, and I'm hoping that our next guest, Angela Nickerson, can add some detail not only about the ceiling and the altar wall of the Last Judgment and some of other Michelangelo's wonderful work. So given his countless works, it might be surprising to learn that Michelangelo only signed one of his works or his masterpieces, and that would be his Pietà. It is located in St. Peter's and wasn't originally signed when the master completed it. But one day, Michelangelo went in to visit his work after it was installed in the Petronilla Chapel, and he overheard some admirers discussing the masterpiece. One of them asked, "Who was it that created such beauty?" The reply came, "Our Gobbo from Milan." Michelangelo came back the next day with his hammer and chisel and hid in St. Peter's until it closed for the evening, then carved his signature across the strap on the Virgin Mary's chest, assuring that no one would ever make that mistake again. Michelangelo worked until the end of his life, never accepting anything but perfection from his work. While he was at work on his own funerary monument, creating another Pietà that's located in Florence at the Museo dell'Opera, right behind the Grand Duomo in Florence, he used his self-portrait once again in the sculpture as Nicodemus. Well, during the work on the sculpture, which would have been, again, for his own monument, he found fault in the marble. In a fit of rage, he took a hammer to the sculpture, and it was only saved by an apprentice who stopped Michelangelo from completely destroying the work. I'd mentioned that it's located in the Museo dell'Opera del Duomo, and when you walk into the museum, you're going to go up. It's up on the first platform on the stairs going upstairs, and it's the only piece. It's wonderful because you can actually walk around the entire piece and get a real sense of Michelangelo's handiwork. It's unfinished and was literally almost destroyed by the artist, and you can actually see where Michelangelo himself, where he attacked the work and broke off certain pieces that had to be replaced. And one of his apprentices, Michelangelo passed before actually finishing the work, did additional work to try to complete the wonderful statue. I'm not going to tell you which piece he did or did not do. I think it's more interesting if you go take a look yourself, either visiting in Florence or taking a look on unabellavista.com/radioshow and trying to identify which piece of the statue isn't created by Michelangelo. It's pretty obvious, actually, if you look at take a look at the Nicodemus figure, which is the tallest one of the sculpture series itself, and I think you'll be able to quickly identify which of the other two figures is not by Michelangelo. Well, Michelangelo ultimately died in Rome, and his body had to be smuggled back to Florence, and he's buried not only in his home city of Florence, but in the church Santa Croce, which is near the neighborhood where Michelangelo grew up. It is impossible, I think, in a very short segment to speak at length about so many wonderful works of Michelangelo, but I think the Pietà deserves probably most of the recognition, the one that's in St. Peter's. I should say that my aunt and my mother, both mothers, of course, when they viewed this wonderful, wonderful sculpture by Michelangelo, they had an emotional reaction. They say it touches women very, very deeply. It's a wonderful, polished, emotional sculpture of the Virgin Mary holding a dead Christ in her arms, and it's overwhelming because it looks so realistic and it's lifelike in the stone and the delivery of the emotion. I think that when you walk in, unfortunately, it's behind pretty thick bulletproof glass these days. I think that they're fearful of people attacking it with a hammer, like some crazed lunatic attacked the statue of David in Florence and actually damaged the foot of the great David by Michelangelo. So now it's behind bulletproof glass in St. Peter's. But when you get in there, if you look through your camera lens or a video camera lens, you can actually get a better perspective. The glass, you have to might adjust so that the reflection off the glass doesn't impede your view through the camera. And you can actually see the sculpture very, very well. And you can actually read across the strap on the Virgin Mary's chest the signature that Michelangelo delivered. And I'll get into that in a moment and actually tell you what it means. It's in Latin, but I'll give it to you in English so you have a better understanding of what that is. Michelangelo's style, his particular style in art, is called terribilità, terrible. But I have to admit, his art is angelic. In my opinion, I think Michelangelo is the world's only master. Every other artist in the world is his student. And Michelangelo, in my opinion, was truly, truly touched by God. He lived his life dedicated to his work, always fearful and fitful of what others thought of him, worked tirelessly day and night, and created not only sculpture, but wonderful paintings. You can see the ceiling, obviously the altar wall. There are individual paint, specifically one of his paintings in the Uffizi. And in his home in Florence, a lot of people think that it might not be worth a visit. I disagree. I think it's highly worth a visit. You can see some of his early work and some sketches of some lost work that he was working on called the Battle... I was going to say Anghieri, but that's from Leonardo da Vinci. He creates a battle scene in, supposed to be in the Cinquecento room in the Palazzo Vecchio in Florence. And for the life of me, it escapes me what the name of that what that work is. Let's see, the Battle of Anghieri was from Leonardo da Vinci, who was painting at the same time that Michelangelo was creating this particular work. And maybe Angela can help me out when she jumps on the line here. I do apologize. But it's a wonderful work, and it's essentially the Florentines being alarmed that the Pisans were attacking the city of Florence, and they were all bathing in the Arno River. And it's an image of nude men pulling themselves out of the river to get dressed very, very quickly to go into battle. It was actually a false alarm, and it was done by the general of the particular militia to make sure that the soldiers were always prepared and not taking things too lightly because the Pisans could attack at any time. I promise you I will think of the name of that wonderful work in a moment. I'm looking through a book right now, and it's a little embarrassing. But as I look for that, I think I'm going to read a letter that Michelangelo wrote to a friend of his by the name of John Pistoia while he was painting the Sistine Chapel. You can actually see it in the Una Bella Vista Rome guidebook in the Vatican section. And not only does he write the letter, but he draws a little picture of himself as he's painting the ceiling. And through that picture, people understand that he did not paint the ceiling on his back. He certainly was standing up. And there's a couple of other wonderful stories that go along with the creation of the Sistine Chapel and lots of other works by Michelangelo that I'm going to get into here over time, because I only have about 20 minutes for this, you know, the first segment. So I think it's easier to digest and appreciate as we break things up into different segments. So in the coming weeks, I'll be talking further about not only the great works of Michelangelo, but the other artists and things with some fun and interesting stories. So let me read the letter here that Michelangelo writes. This actual and original letter is in the Vatican Library, and the Pope, I heard and understood, that took out one of the collections of all of Michelangelo's original letters in his own hand and was reading through them. And I know this because one of my friends who is an academic was doing some work studying Michelangelo and was unable to access the archives simply because the Pope had them, and he was obviously outranked. So let me read this the letter by Michelangelo. I've got myself a goiter from this strain, as water gives the cats in Lombardy, or maybe it is in some other country. My belly's pushed by force beneath my chin, my beard toward heaven. I feel the back of my brain upon my neck. I grow the breast of a harpy. My brush, above my face continually, makes it a splendid floor by dripping down. My loins have penetrated to my paunch, my rump's a crupper as a counterweight, and pointless the unseeing steps I go. In front of me, my skin is being stretched while it folds up behind and forms a knot, and I am bending like a Syrian bow. And judgment, hence, must grow, born in the mind, peculiar and untrue. You cannot shoot while the gun's askew. John, come to the rescue of my dead painting now, and of my honor. I'm not in a good place, and I'm no painter. Imagine that from the hand of Michelangelo, who created the wonderful and probably the single best fresco that you'll see, in my opinion, not only in Italy, but throughout the world. We're going to be talking in a couple of minutes here after the break with Angela Nickerson, who wrote a wonderful book, A Journey into Michelangelo's Rome, and I'm very, very excited to get the answer for the painting by Michelangelo that was left unfinished and actually destroyed by admirers because he didn't finish it, so they took the sketches of the work, and I'm terribly frustrated that I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, we'll be talking on future episodes here specifically about the Great David by Michelangelo. We'll be talking about the prisoners or the slaves also by Michelangelo left unfinished, and we'll be going into specifically the another one of the wonderful sculptures you'll see by him of the Moses in the tomb of Julius II, which is in a wonderful church in Rome called San Pietro in Vincoli, which means Saint Peter in Chains. So with that, I'm going to be taking a quick break and coming back with the great author Angela Nickerson, and who will hopefully bail me out and give you the answer to that wonderful painting. Ciao.
If you love travel, imagine visiting one of the world's greatest cities and exploring it as very few ever have. Only Context Travel makes it possible. Context Travel offers in-depth walking seminars for intellectually curious travelers like you. It's your chance to experience a city as a cultural experience, unlike any traditional tour. Context Travel is a network of architects, historians, and art historians. They feature small groups of six or less, led by PhD-level scholars, with walks lasting from 3 hours to a full day. You can book a Context tour in seven great cities: New York, Paris, London, Rome, Florence, Venice, Naples, or Istanbul. Context Travel offers concierge services, art and archaeology walks, cuisine walks, shopping walks, and more. Visit us online at contexttravel.com. That's contexttravel.com. That's contexttravel.com.